We have our first guest on the lines here tonight, and this is going to be a very special segment. Safe to say, we've been looking forward to this one for at least about 6 months or so. I believe it was on our June 3rd episode last year of the program that we had on Sasha Gervaisi, Hollywood screenwriter, and a gentleman who put together a most unique project, both kind of off the beaten path with his career, different than some of the other things that he had done and is working on now, and different than a lot of the projects that that you see out there, even in this age of reality TV and trying to capture things like that. This was a really, really sharp, outstanding documentary that was put together. It was called Anvil, The Story of Anvil, and we had Sasha on the show to talk about it. The movie was at the time in limited release. It went on to wider release from there. It was released on DVD in October, and one of the objectives of this thing was to try to help give a nice big goose to the comeback efforts of Anvil. The last couple of years getting some traction, starting to get back into the mainstream here and trying to claw back to that destiny that they had basically right at their fingertips in about the mid-80s. And it's been an incredible journey. So we're going to talk about that, what we saw in the documentary, where things continue to go. And actually, in our Sports Talk Network flagship city of Cleveland, Ohio tonight, the gentleman we're going to talk to is actually in our city. Tomorrow night starts the North American tour as the latest leg of this comeback for Anvil. So we have with us on the phone line Steve Kudlow, but you know him as Lips. Lips, welcome to the FDH Lounge. Good to have you on. Hope you
hello.
Good travels today.
Lips. Hello.
Hi, Lips. Hi. Good to have you on. We're glad to have you with us here tonight. I want to start by asking you, in terms of the movie, when the idea was pitched to you guys. Of course, Sasha had been a roadie for you guys back in the 80s, back long before he went to Hollywood and did what he's done. I have to believe there was a real trust level in working with him on something like this, as opposed to having somebody approach you guys out of the blue. You had to know, with Sasha's respect for you guys, he wasn't going to clown you. He wasn't going to treat it like a Spinal Tap type of movie. So was there the comfort level for this thing from day one?
Hello?
Lips? Hi, Lips.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Hey, good to have you on.
You're really, really, really super quiet, man. I can barely hear you.
All right, we're going to do everything we can on this end here, and I'll try and help with my own voice.
Wow.
Okay. Lips, I just want to ask, I want to start by asking, in terms of the way, when the movie was pitched to you, of course, Sasha had worked for you guys as a roadie back in the 80s, back long before he ever went to Hollywood. I have to believe there was a real comfort level working with him, right? Something that there wouldn't have been had it been a stranger approaching you guys with this. You had to know, because of his respect for you, he wasn't going to clown you. He wasn't going to treat it like Spinal Tap. He was going to treat you guys with respect. So I imagine there was a lot of comfort probably working with him, correct?
Well, absolutely. It was somebody that we had met when he was a kid, and his whole intention was to help the band out. So he just told us, be ourselves, let me film everything, and don't worry about it. And that's exactly what we did.
It played out in amazing form. It was a really unbelievable movie. There are two things in particular that kind of jumped out at me, one of them within the first couple of minutes of watching it. And that was at the beginning when you had some of these testimonials. You had on there guys from Metallica and Guns N' Roses and some of your contemporaries from at the time, and talking about that and just talking about you guys with such respect. And, you know, and I can't believe, you know, these guys didn't hit that level at the time, and it's an unbelievable thing that had happened. As you look at that, Lips, I mean, on the spectrum of bitter to sweet, and bittersweet being kind of somewhere in the middle, getting that kind of respect from them, how do you look at that? Is it just an unqualified great thing of, look at how much our peers respect us? Is there a little bit of a twinge of, hey, that should have been us? I mean, how do you look at something like that when you hear them talking about you in that kind of way?
Well, interestingly, all these guys have kind of been friends through the years, and you know, the way that it all is that we're all fans of each other. I mean, that's at the heart of all of it, really. And, you know, the stature of your band has nothing to do with it. It's really all about music. It's about how we fancy each other's music. It's as simple and straightforward as that. We don't care about record sales. And, like, a guy like me, my favorite band, some of my favorite bands you've probably never heard of, bands like Blood Rock, you know what I mean? Yeah. Stuff that you go, what's that?
No, I understand.
I mean, it's the same essence. And, you know, in the same way that I love Blood Rock or even a band like Raven, or, you know, they're fairly obscure, you know, and they're not chart crashers, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. With pop songs, these are musician-oriented music, stuff that we get off on from listening to other guys playing.
No.
And we admire each other. It's just as simple as that.
Okay. No, that's pretty straightforward. I understand where you're coming from, and I think anybody with any type of artistic bent, you know, whatsoever is going to understand what you just said, because there's something to be said for appreciating the quality of something. Yeah, in and of itself. So I can see where you guys all look at it that way. The other thing that jumps out at me, too, I don't know if this was in the editing of how Sasha put this thing together, or if it was just a moment that kind of came out of nowhere, but the thing that really jumped off the screen and grabbed me, I think this was after you guys had gotten back from your tour overseas. And you were kind of bummed.
Right.
You were kind of bummed out with the way things were going, and you appeared to have Lips almost an epiphany on there, as far as, you know what, you know why we didn't make it, because the production sucked. We need to get a top flight guy like this one guy here. If we had him now, it would make a difference. If we would have had him then, it would have made a difference. But here's the thing: in those testimonials at the beginning of the movie, nobody seemed to have an idea of what had happened. Earlier during the movie, neither you nor Rob Reiner had really referred to this. So is it something you guys had always known deep down? Was that an epiphany that just hit you at that moment of, you know why it didn't happen? Where did that moment come from?
Well, the real true realities about everything is that, as far as not making it, we got signed to an independent record company in Canada who absolutely refused to license the first three albums in the United States at the most crucial time in heavy metal in 1983. We got involved with a massive, huge manager, in fact, Aerosmith's manager, who shook us loose from that record label and tried to get the licensing for the United States, but couldn't do it. When we went to go try to get record deals in the United States, all of the labels wanted access to the first three albums, because they felt without them it just wouldn't work out. They need the history as well as the band. Mm-hmm. We can't all of a sudden remanufacture or redo everything, you know, so basically, we got put on the back burner between 1983 and 87 and weren't able to record or put out records. That pretty much puts a cork in the bottle, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. You know, four years of being stuck in a pattern like that, when that genre was just breaking out like it was, oh, absolutely. I can see, and I think anybody can see, where that would have been something that would have done you guys in, as far as breaking through to that
next... Then as soon as that plug is pulled, then your tour support, everything, that all the aspects of how you get to your audience is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have to do is build new bridges. So we have to go find other labels, which were also independent labels, who could virtually do nothing more than put the records in the store, but God only knew himself that the records were sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you got to be able to go out, and credibility is given by, is really gained and manufactured by being seen. So if you're not being seen and being put on major tours and being exposed, then you lose your credibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we stayed in the underground. Not that that's a bad thing. I mean, let's look at it in this way. And I use this analogy on a daily basis. We're not Home Depot. We are the corner hardware store. We have a clientele, always have, and we've been in business for 30 years. Simple as that.
That is a great analogy, and you know that's one of the things we love about you guys. You know, you're authentic. You know, you're one of a kind. You know, not certainly not in the cookie cutter mold. And anybody that watched that documentary can certainly attest to that. But you know, it's interesting you mentioned about the guy who'd been the manager with Aerosmith, because in the interview with Sasha when he was on the show, he mentioned the same thing. I went back and replayed it the other day just to kind of refresh my memory a little bit. He made a point that I thought was interesting. He said that, you know, you guys ended up, you know, taking advice from him and everything, and Sasha seemed to be saying it was the smart thing to do at the time. Why on earth would you not listen to this guy? But then sometimes in life, you know, the right thing to do on paper comes back to bite you. You guys ended up listening to him and ended up getting led down the primrose path, it seems.
That's precisely what happened. I mean, who would think you're going with one of the biggest time managers in the business at the time? Why would he misdirect me? Why would he make mistakes? He's successful. I'm trying to get successful. It's got to work, right? I mean, that was our mentality. Meanwhile, the other opportunity, which was Johnny Zeeb, who basically discovered Metallica, was standing there too, going, "Come with me." You know. Meanwhile, he picks up Anthrax and Overkill, right? Mm-hmm. And Anvil doesn't get picked up. We end up basically derailed and sat in the sidelines doing it all on our own, which is actually, at the end of the day, quite commendable and actually much more dramatic and much more explosive in the way that where we are today.
Yeah,
you know, I went up to David Krebs, who was Aerosmith's manager, who came to one of the screenings. And I went and I shook his hand. I said, "Thank you very much, David, for screwing up my career, because I wouldn't be here now."
Dad, you know what? Let's elaborate on that a little bit, Lips, because you know you look at the bands at the time that broke out, you know, and to whatever degree that they did commercially, whether it be Metallica or Anthrax or whatever. I mean, do you feel like it's more of you know, not to put them down, but as far as what was right for you, for your story, for the story of Anvil, do you feel like it's more fitting, like it's more rock and roll for you guys to have had to scratch and claw and do this underdog thing all these years?
Okay. Absolutely, and that's what I'm saying, that it makes it a lot more dramatic and a lot more meaningful. It's not like we didn't keep the band together for the sake of money. We never did it for the sake of money. We did it for the sake of art, and that's what we've been doing. And to do it sustained for 30 years is incredibly dramatic. It's not like Metallica, who's been big for years and staying together. And it's such an opposite sort of state of mind on the level that look at the guys in Metallica make a movie and they've got everything going for them and the poor guys are miserable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not going to say it. Like, let me put the shoe on the other foot, and I don't know how much different it would wear. You know, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, I've never had that success, so I certainly wouldn't. I wouldn't know what that would have felt. Would have felt like, but to show the extent of how friendship and how the poor guy suffered with their friendship within the band, and yet they're surrounded by all this success, and then you see the exact opposite. You see guys who've got virtually nothing and dead end day jobs, slugging their asses off out on the road, and they're best of friends.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what? Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you know, but that's, I don't know, though. I mean, I think there are a lot of us that can probably relate to what you just said, because I think sometimes in life, I know in the case of me, some of my best friendships were formed in times of great adversity. If you feel like you've been through the foxhole with some friends of yours, you bond a little bit deeper, maybe, and the loyalty is stronger.
My friendship with Rob is like the same thing as you know, the lieutenant and the sergeant went out into the trenches, and we've been fighting a war together for years.
Uh-huh.
That's my brother, man.
Now, having said that, and looking at this, it's one of the fascinating things in watching, you know, the documentary. And when people go to see you guys on tour, with your tour that's launching tomorrow night here, I mean, everybody has seen you on stage as, you know, Lips the charismatic front man. But what's just striking to me, and I think probably just about everybody that watched the movie, was, you know, how you just sort of burst through the screen, it just in regular daily life in this documentary here. You know, you're a larger than life guy even in this. I mean, when you look at that and when you see, now you talk about being friends with Rob, but you know, friends have squabbles, and you got, whether it be with Rob or whether it be with some other people, I mean, you had some doozies with people in the course of this thing, really kind of kept, made it entertaining in the course of this documentary. You know, you're very passionate, you're very much arguing for your point of view and trying to get things across for this band here. I mean, what do you think about when you watch your character, you know, now I won't even see your character, that's you, when you're watching,
man,
the movie.
It's just me. I there is no inhibitions. I have nothing to hide. I have no shame.
Okay.
Absolutely none. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I do the best I can. I don't care if I'm judged. It means nothing to me. Those kind of things really mean nothing to me. What's in my heart and where I want to go and how I want to get there, those are the things that matter to me. My family, my friends, my band, my music, I live for it. You know, yeah. It's just as simple as that.
And it's, well, and I respect that a lot. I think anybody would have to, because it's a really authentic thing to say, and it's great that you didn't mug for the cameras and try to put on a separate persona. I just like to ask you then, in the course of these things here, okay, let me use the scenes with Rob as an example, where you guys were going back and forth. I'm wondering if, when you've dealt with somebody, the good, the bad, and everything in between all these years that you've had, do you know basically how far you can go? But like, how far is too far? Maybe the same thing with members of your family, because Sasha and I were talking about this, and I kind of made a joke at one point. This is with all respect, but I said, maybe it's the editing or whatever. I said, half these scenes, y'all looking at this, and I said, I'm like expecting somebody to stab poor Lips with a fork in the forehead here. I mean, how do you know how far to go when you're dealing with people, Lips?
You just go to the edge.
Trial and error.
You know, what are you going to do? You go to the edge, man. You know, like, sometimes you have to. You got no choice.
Uh-huh.
I mean, life deals you stuff, man, and that you got to deal with. And sometimes you lose your temper because you're a human being. I mean, that's the essence of being a human being. We're not perfect. And each of us make mistakes, and each of us have to deal with those things and be responsible for it all as well.
Well, you know,
there are a lot of things riding on my shoulders at all times, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
You know, you get what you want. In
exactly.
Life, you get what you want because you work for it and you attain it.
Yep.
You don't wish for things to happen. You make things happen, and that's the type of person that I am. And you have to go after it with everything you got. There's no intermediate. You have to be extraordinarily driven and one track mind to get any kind of success in the music business. It's a brutal, brutal cutthroat business. Anybody getting the money runs with it. No one wants to share. Everybody's got their hands out when you go and play. The musicians are always last to get paid, if they get paid at all. And everything leeches off them, and all for the sake of their love for their music and their passion, and that's completely and utterly taken advantage of at every turn. At every turn.
Mm-hmm.
A manager knows these guys will work for any manager will know that a band will work for virtually nothing just for the sake, because they love and live for being on stage.
Exactly. No, and
I mean, that aspect, the same thing with recording with companies that have been, I mean, this has been an endless process for, and it's not just musicians, but it's actors, It's everything in the entertainment business. Talent is a dime a dozen. It's not treated with respect, and it's one of the most precious and glorious things to have.
It is. It is.
And you know, if you have a talent, you're blessed. And it's unfortunate that it's not treated with the respect that it's deserved. It's one of the only, you know, the arts are the only things that isn't indestructible, that doesn't wear out, that doesn't fade away and doesn't exist anymore. It's one of the only things that mankind makes that has those qualities.
You know, well, it's a thing, Lips, where we have a lot of people from a lot of different creative areas on this show, and I mean, I think your explanation right now just captured it probably as well as anybody ever has, you know, and what you have to go through with the process to try to make it and to try to get ahead and the minefields that you have to go through. I'm going to put a question to you that I put to Sasha at about the time that the movie was coming out, and that is because the movie seemed to capture you guys when you were watching the movie, like towards the end of it, when you guys had put out that CD with the producer, that seemed to be what probably, you know, we would call the beginning of this comeback, and then the movie kind of accelerated it from there. You've played a lot of big stadiums over the course of the last year with some festivals. Now you've got this tour that you're headlining here. Let me just ask you a simple question in your mind moving forward. What constitutes making it? Is it just the ability to go out and keep doing this and keep playing shows all the time?
No, you know what? You know what making it is?
What?
And part of my equation and part of my life and the way that I look at it, my view on it is very, very, very straightforward. When you do what you love and you get away with it, you are successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing it and getting away with it for 36 years.
Yeah.
So all that's happening right now is I built a cake, and now I'm putting icing on it.
Well, it's been an amazing cake thus far, you know, to use that analogy. You guys have now got this tour that's actually, as I said, kicking off. We're actually speaking to one another in the same city here tonight, Cleveland, Ohio. Talk about this tour, some of the different places you guys are going to be playing, the duration of it, what you guys are hoping to accomplish here. What does this Anvil North American tour look like?
Well, believe it or not, I'm on the New York Thruway.
Oh, okay.
We're actually just entering into Pennsylvania. I'm at a truck stop McDonald's here.
Oh my!
I'm
okay.
Standing outside freezing because I can't hear because I got rock and roll ears, and we're about to go on the most extensive and most impressive tour we've ever done in the United States. And I can't even begin to tell you how exciting this is. People are going to be coming up to see three guys living the dream and in total ecstasy. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah.
What do we plan to accomplish? Meet as many people as we possibly can, shake everybody's hand and thank them for making this dream come true. That's what we're going to do.
Well, you know, it's a great story in real life, Lips, just like in the movie, because the movie was a very accurate depiction of real life here, especially knowing what you went through to call us tonight. I mean, we thank you all the more so. We wish you the very best of luck on this tour, and we'd be thrilled to have you back on the show at some point.
Okay, that would be great, man. Just keep me informed. Give me an email and tell me when to call, and I'll be glad to call you, man.
We'll do that, and we're going to keep pushing the tour. We're going to keep reminding people to go out and see you and check your website for details. We'll link to all of that. Lips, a real, real pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on tonight with us. The very best of luck to you and your band.
Okay, thank you very much. Have a good night.
Thank you. Travel safely, Lips. All right, thank you.
Okay,
right.
Bye-bye.
All right. That was Lips, everybody. Steve Lips Kudlow. Truly, Ryan, I think we can say one of a kind.